every day. Makes me wanna holler, go away. I need more peace and hope and love. Where do I find it in this crazy old world?
I need strategies, strategies for every radio. Your dose of radio rehab. Strategies for even radio.
Lauren and David share strategies for living, and it makes me aware.
I've got strategies. I got strategies for living.
Strategies for living radio.
Your dose of radio rehab. Strategies for living radio. Your dose of radio rehab.
Oh, you know, we need strategies. We all need them. Strategies for living, that is. So are you ready? You're ready for your daily dose. Your daily dose of radio rehab.
Oh, I am ready.
All right. Hey, folks, welcome. Welcome into another edition of Strategies for Living. I'm Dr. David McMillan. She is psychotherapist, POPC Lauren Leon McMillan. Lauren, have you ever had a situation where you find out something that you didn't know, and it's like everything clicks into place? Mm-hmm. What was mass confusion in your mind all of a sudden clicks?
Yeah, the puzzle piece leads to that wonderful aha moment.
Yeah.
It all makes sense now, right?
Yeah. Keep that in mind as we talk today, because we're going to talk to professor and author Sol Smith. Now, let me tell you about Sol. Sol was diagnosed with autism as an adult.
Yeah.
And so a lifetime of, you know, intuiting that he just experienced the world in a different way from others. All of a sudden just clicked in. It made sense.
Yeah.
And so instead of shame and his hiding his neurodifferences, he has used the experience, his experience as a college professor, to create ways to articulate and explore the differences. And he started on TikTok and quickly gained millions of views. And you can imagine why. He's got a new book out.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about it today. It is called The Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery, Flourishing as a Neurodivergent Adult.
Man, I can't express how needed and important this is and the courage it takes to write a book like this.
So I'm with you 100%.
I'm really excited to talk to Sol and see.
Well, let's take a quick break and we will come back and we'll dive right in to this whole Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery. That's today. Here on Strategies for Living. Folks, thank you for being with us, and we appreciate our sponsors who make it all possible, the Robinson Film Center and Azalea Cleaners and Pintail Roofing and Learning RX and the Balanced Life Wellness Center and Fertitta's Delicatessen, home of the Godfather, Alligator Italian Sausage, and some pretty good Muffies, too. Back in a moment to meet Sol Smith, our life strategist. The Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery. That's today here on Strategies for Living.
Tune in daily, find the light. Healthy mind and spirits bright. Strategies for living strong. Feel the vibe, it won't go wrong.
And welcome into Strategies for Living. Lauren Leon McMillan, David McMillan. Let's welcome into the program now Sol Smith. Sol is the author of The Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery and a certified autism specialist who is autistic, dyslexic, and living with ADHD. He spent more than two decades as a college professor before shifting his professional focus to coaching other autistic and ADHD people to gain autonomy in their lives. Sol's speaking skills have earned him a following of hundreds of thousands on TikTok, led to educational seminars about neurodiversity with corporations around the world, and he lives with his wife and four children, and you can find him online at professorsol.com. Sol Smith, welcome.
Yes, welcome.
Welcome to Strategies.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Oh, I couldn't be happier to be here. Thank you.
So, man, I am so happy that you're here.
Yes.
So tell us about the journey, because I'm holding up to the radio your book, The Autistic Guide to Self-Discovery. Everybody can see it here on the radio. So what led to this, Sol? What inspired you and what led to this wonderful book that I'm holding in my hands?
It's a good question. Like you had said earlier, that I always sort of knew that I was different. I knew that there was something different about how I was experiencing the world. And I always sort of saw this as a positive. And I honestly hold that up as a quality of my parents, that they were very affirming parents and, you know, never really said a hurtful thing to me, just always were very encouraging. And, going through my, I didn't have a great social life growing up. But my career started off really well, but I ran a lot into lots of speed bumps. And I always knew that I was, again, you know, that I'm doing my job a little bit differently than other professors, that I'm teaching a little bit differently. My feedback is good, so I'm not super worried about it. I figure everything's going to work out.
Yeah.
But, you know, after several colleges around the country, feeling like I end up on the wrong side of the wrong people at the wrong time, I started going, you know, there's something else going on here. And around that time, I get into these little different interests from time to time, whether it be like physics or anthropology or certain histories or something. I'll start reading a lot about things. And it just so happened at the time I was reading a lot about psychology, and I started getting in on autism. And the more I got into it, the more I went, wait a minute, this is starting to sound familiar, and really what it was stepping back from a lot of the clinical language and trying to see how this would translate experientially and starting to notice that this is making my life make more sense when I look at it through this lens.
Yeah, it was all clicking.
And yes. Yeah. It all kind of comes together. And because, you know, you see patterns and you're like, you know, patterns aren't random. They indicate something, but there was just nothing sort of tying them together. And so when I saw this one, and it ties together things that you just wouldn't expect, you know, like it can tie together, for example, employment history, but it can also that comes together with the fact that my t-shirt really bothers me if there's a tag or if the collar's too tight.
Right.
Fact that background noises just kills me in the restaurant. I can't stand the music they play at stores. Fluorescent lights or something. I usually have to wear a hat or sunglasses when I'm inside if they're around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so it gets into sensory things and it gets into social things. Like it bleeds into everything because being autistic means having different things about your nervous system than we typically see.
Yeah.
So it brought all of this stuff together, and it was a lot to process. It was a while before I even told my family that I suspected this. Then finally sort of, you know, by the time that I did, I was well underway on getting a psychology degree because I knew that I wanted to work with this for the rest of my life. I knew that I wanted to bring more awareness to the experience and sort of show the people who slipped through the cracks when we were younger that this may have been something going on in your life, and that there are ways that you can try to take control now, even if you weren't able to sort of start out with this knowledge.
So what I'm hearing you say, it's never too late. It's never too late.
No, it is never too late. Yeah, yeah. You know, I have people write to me all the time who say that they are in their 60s and their 70s and that they are just sort of starting and they're afraid that it's too late. But, you know, it's to make sense out of your life is really important, I think. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, not, autism is a, it's a, you know, it's a nervous system, but it's also a description. And having that description, having that, that those words, having that language for your experience can help bring a lot of cohesion to your experience. Mm-hmm. But I will say that, that studies have shown that the earlier you're diagnosed, the better your overall quality of life is on average.
Right.
And that's really good to know, because it means that we can, you know, as the next generations are coming up and have a better vocabulary for understanding themselves, that they will have advantages that many of us missed. And that's nothing but a good thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Is this the diagnosis? I mean, you know, we read things out there. We read things in on the internet. We read things in magazines and about the increasing prevalence of autism spectrum disorder, and that it, you know, it just a few years ago the numbers were something like what, 1 in 10,000, and now it's 1 in 30 or so in just a few short years. What do you make of that as an autism specialist? So.
Well, when you look at maps of the world from pre-Columbian times, they didn't include anything existing in the Western Hemisphere.
Right.
It, but then when you look at them, that they do include it, it doesn't mean that land grew up out of the water. Mm-hmm. You know, they simply, you know, the people keeping track of these things simply discovered that there were some unknowns there and added them to the lexicon.
Right. Yeah.
And I firmly believe that that's what we're seeing, is that, that we're not seeing some huge, huge jump in the actual condition, but that what we're seeing is people being able to better recognize it, being able to better recognize it within themselves, and that a lot of this self-awareness is coming at a time that we have a lot of self-awareness about other things too, about, you know, sexualities or gender identities and things that, as again, the vocabulary increases and acceptance increases on a social level, if not a political one, that that people feel a little bit more free to bring these things up. And I think a lot of this just, a lot of the hesitance comes from just the way that our, you know, the industrial revolutions are designed our workplaces and our schools to make us kind of think that we're all, you know, replaceable in the sense that we're all very similar. And we're really not. There's a lot of differences, and the conditions in, under which we have to live, like we have to make different adaptations to them.
Yeah.
And I think as we're starting to realize this, there's more acceptance, you know. I mean, for example, like we did not, like professionals did not think that women could be autistic in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which is crazy. But now we're seeing more. But what we believe is that about 80% of women who are autistic over the age of 18 have not been identified. So there are a lot of people out there who may be struggling with challenges from this. And especially as you get older and your working memory declines, lots of executive function challenges get to be more. And, you know, a lot of us, very few people come to me and say, you know, I started to think that I am autistic because things were just going so well. You know, usually it's that something became too much of a challenge. Something became overwhelming. Things were falling apart, and they were seeing this and going, you know, something else is going on here.
What? So since you mm-hmm. uncovered the fact that, okay, well, I am, you know, I do have autism. What are the biggest changes for you that you've experienced with that knowing that you didn't have previously? What were the two or three biggest things?
Gosh, you know, I think some of the biggest things are seeing it in my family members. You know, my family growing up, we sort of saw ourselves as outsiders most places, and just kind of didn't really have very much to credit that to, but we're accepting of it. We felt sort of insular as a group. And sort of walking away with this notion that, like, wow, my family communicated together in a much more granular way than people seem to be communicating in the outside world. And that's really big. Some of the accommodations that I make for myself have been real game changers. Mm-hmm. And I would say that honestly, like the simplest accommodation that I made that has made the biggest difference is allowing myself to fidget with things.
Yeah.
Silly as that sounds, you know, fidgeting with something, if you're very sensitive, you have a lot of information coming in that your brain's not filtering out. Like brains filter out a lot of our inputs. Otherwise, it's just too much stuff going on around us. But if you're very sensitive to things, it's filtering out things that may not necessarily be important for that moment. And if you're fidgeting, this creates a stimulation that will block out some of those other inputs, you know, because you can't process everything at once. So you're blocking out some of those other inputs. And, you know, they've found in studies something like if an ADHD person, for example, is fidgeting versus not fidgeting, that their memory retention for a college lecture will go up by like 29%.
Wow.
And that's a major difference, yeah. Right? I mean, that's major.
That is. There's so much here to learn. Sol Smith is our life strategist today. The book is The Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery. It's out from New World Library. It's flourishing as a neurodivergent adult. And that key is flourishing. And I think you hear it. You hear it in Sol Smith. We've got a whole lot more to learn from our life strategist, Sol Smith, today here on Strategies for a Living. So don't go away. Come back with us. We'll be right back. You're going to see the difference when you go to Azalea Cleaners. You'll hear about it, too. Azalea Cleaners has been fine dry cleaning since 1958, plus laundry, alterations and repairs, comforters, wedding gown cleaning and restoration. You'll hear about it from your friends because they'll see it, too. They'll notice the Azalea difference. Azalea is convenient. 732 Azalea Drive, 9220 Ellerby Road, and 9227 Mansfield Road. Plus, the front door of your home or business with Azalea's delivery on demand. Just text SETUP to 249-8283, and Azalea will pick up your clothes and deliver them back clean and fresh to you. You can't get closer than that. That's the Azalea difference. You'll notice it right away. Others will, too. The Azalea difference. Fine dry cleaning since 1958. Text SETUP to 249-8283 and get the Azalea difference. AzaleaCleaners.com.
Hi, this is Jay Merle for Pintail Roofing. Let's talk about quality. When you hire Pintail to build your roof, here's what you can expect. Quality and quality control are the most important concerns for us at Pintail, and you need to know that Pintail stands tall with swift and professional performance on any warranty call. This is our most important policy. And remember, we're your neighbors. We'll be here for you for the long haul. Our family's lived here for over 100 years, and we aren't going anywhere. On the commercial side of Pintail's business, our fluid applied roofing solutions can save thousands of dollars over conventional commercial roofing options. Call Pintail at 226-ROOF for a free inspection of your home or commercial building. That's 226-7663. Pintail Roofing. What's the condition of your roof?
And welcome back. Welcome back into Strategies for Living Radio. Lauren Leon McMillan, David McMillan, our life strategist today, Sol Smith, and his new book is The Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery, out from New World Library. It's flourishing as a neurodivergent adult, and you can find him also online, and I hope you'll do that. You know, there's so many people probably will want to connect with Professor Sol professorssoul.com. That's his website, and it's Soul, S-O-L, professorssoul.com. And, man, so what a journey. You know, we've mentioned ADHD.
Right.
Along with,
mm-hmm. yeah.
along with autism. You believe that you are... You have both of those on board. Is there a connection between autism spectrum disorder and ADHD? And if so, what is that connection?
Yeah, we definitely know that there's a correlation or a comorbidity. We don't. It's very hard to get solid numbers since there's so much that we don't know about the autistic population. But I've read anywhere from 60% of autistics also have ADHD to 80% of autistics also have ADHD. And there's a lot of different ideas about why this is the case. Some people think that maybe it just sort of runs within the same genetic code. Some people think that it could be that the executive function properties of autism can mimic those of ADHD, that it's not exactly ADHD, but it meets those qualifications. And like my personal pet theory, and this is, you know, I say this tongue in cheek, but my experience has played it out. I think that a lot of autistics and ADHDers are ending up together. I think that they're ending up as a couple and having children.
Yeah.
it makes some sense because almost every autistic person I know has a spouse who's ADHD. And I think that this is because they have a sort of similar background socially. They have a sort of similar experiences when it comes to having challenges and having, you know, whether it be executive function or employment or school or whatever. So they relate to each other well, mm-hmm. but that the ADHDer usually understands the social world a little bit better and becomes a sort of conduit for that understanding for the autistic person. And that the autistic person has a propensity of seeing things with this bottom-up processing, seeing things very granularly, and that adds a sort of texture to the ADHD person's life that they like, because they like having a different point of view as well as a sort of outsider. So I think that they're very complementary in the right circumstances, and it's possible that it's just from, you know, years of breeding this way that we are seeing them together. I had no idea that I was ADHD until I had my autism assessment, and that was one of the most surprising things when he finally told me my diagnosis was that I had ADHD. And one reason I didn't think I had it was because my wife is so obviously ADHD. It's just like right up front with her.
Yeah.
So, so it was a big surprise to me. And I've been very interested in that connection ever since.
So if a diagnosis comes, in other words, if we discover I have autism, I have autism spectrum disorder, or if a family member, a child, is identified as autism spectrum disorder, what's some of the first things that we as individuals, or we as family, in support of someone we love and care about, what's some of the first things we should do?
I think some of the first things you should do is really kind of hit a pause button on reactions, just because it's so easy to make somebody feel insecure or sort of rejected by a reaction that could be negative. You know, we're people in our lives who are important to us hold certain spaces within us. And when you tell them that you're autistic and they respond with something sort of like blasé and canned, like, well, we're all on the spectrum, or like, not you. It sort of suggests that whatever studying you've done, and most people, you know, you don't get a diagnosis as an adult without having first self-assessed. And we're thinking about it and studying about this for months, if not years. You know, for me, I had suspected it for 3 years before I even brought it up to anybody. And for somebody to say, no, not you, suggests that without even studying, without even considering it, they know more than you do about this and about you.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating because we tend to, you know, take that very seriously. But, you know, I mean, what we're seeing is the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? That the less you know about something, the more confident you are in your, yeah. in your point of view.
That's it.
You know, So usually it'll take a while before somebody who initially doesn't believe it has that sort of knee-jerk reaction will really, you know, slow down their thinking enough to examine it and see it. So I always tell people to you know, if this doesn't feel like it vibes with you, nod your head and smile, but then do your homework. You know, that I think that at that point it's your job to do some homework and learn more about how high masking autism shows up and what that experience is like. And that's a better idea than grilling the person about it, you know, than saying, wait a minute, well, you know, explain this to me, because anything they have to say is going to feel anecdotal, and it'll be easy to say, well, we all do that. But, you know, we all doing that once in a while is different than, well, this has designed my life. This has designed my responses to the world. So, so yeah, I tell people to slow down and take a moment to really educate yourself before being reactive. Now, as far as our kids go and things, yeah, I think it's a good idea to try to find other parents and other autistics. To me, you know, and I'm not giving any sort of medical advice here or anything, but I think that's even more important than finding experts in the field, because you want to know your kid's point of view. You want to know the way that they're experiencing things.
Yeah.
And a lot of the clinical language distances you from that. So I think finding other people who understand the experience are going to have a lot more of interest to you than just reading a textbook, for example. And that's why, you know, we like to say nothing about us without us, right? Like, yeah. we want there to be autistic representation and autistic voices in the literature and that kind of thing. So I do think that it's really important to turn to those whenever possible.
Yeah.
What are some of the biggest myths you've encountered around autism or ADHD or neurodivergence or any of it? What are some of the biggest myths you've had to come into contact with? And
yeah, I mean, one of the biggest myths, you know, especially with this is much more prevalent with ADHD, is the idea that you know, they're not smart or that they're lazy. And neither of those seem to be true whatsoever. Yeah. You know, I like it's easy to see by our sort of common measures of things how you could see that if you're looking at grades, or you can see that if you're looking at the way they're paying attention to something. But really, you're thinking of somebody whose brain is moving very, very quickly. And, you know, we used to say that there was ADD and ADHD, the difference being the H, which is hyperactivity. But now everything is ADHD, because we've recognized that even if somebody doesn't appear hyperactive, that hyperactivity is actually in the brain circuitry. The brain is constantly moving between ideas. And, you know, one of the ADHD author described it as having a Lamborghini engine, but a bicycle's braking system.
So, I love that.
Yeah, right. So they actually, you know, in navigating the world, they've become very wily. They are very smart. And it's just that a lot of the tasks that require sustained attention on boring things, they're not going to perform as well at. So it's given them, even them, a sense of feeling deficient. And as far as like working hard, they're usually working much, much harder than somebody who's more typically wired for those types of assignments or challenges. So that's one of the really big myths that you see.
What about communicating? What about the communication between, especially, what are the differences between people with autism and someone who's neurotypical?
Oh, yeah. You know, the biggest difference, and it's sort of hard to describe, is between bottom-up thinking and top-down thinking, which is essentially your brain knows that it spends a lot of your body's energy, that cognitive activity is very energy draining, especially when compared to other mammals. So your brain wants to form shortcuts for things. It wants to make generalizations. And typical brains are very good at this. So top-down thinking is comparing something or a situation to something that is already known, which could be seen as jumping to conclusions, where autistic brains are very, like I said before, very granular. They're bottom up. So they're constantly piecing things together. If we have time for it, I have an example of this that sort of explains it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, I used to teach a course on media literacy, and well, we had this section about advertising, and I would show them print advertising, and I wanted them to analyze print advertising And I gave them this tool for it. I said, okay, we're going to look at three different levels of meaning. Like, number one, you're going to look at what is literally in this picture. Mm-hmm. Just list out the literal things. Number two, what's the intended message in this picture? Like, mm-hmm. like, what do the advertisers want you to take away from this? And anybody can find that because it's very intentional. They know what we know, and we're going to go away with that.
Right.
Then the third one is, what sort of, you know, common cultural trend or cultural stereotype is being used to communicate this message? And it was just a really nice way of sort of like trying to get people to pick apart advertising.
Right.
So I put up an ad, right? I put up a Coke ad, and then I say, okay, so number one, first level, what do we see in this picture? And all my students would say, Coke is delicious and refreshing. And I go, no. Number one, what do we literally see in this picture? And they'd say, happy people like Coke. And I'm like, no, it's not happy people like Coke. What do you see? And they'd be like, Coke makes people happy. And I said, no, you see a woman in a swimsuit on the beach holding a can of Coke and smiling. And they go, oh. And it's because the top-down thinker jumps straight to that meaning.
Yeah.
You know, it sees this, it compares it to other knowns, and it goes straight to that meaning, where my brain was always, you know, building this from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. And it really confused me. I was like, gosh, why do you guys not get this? You know, is it the internet, or the cell phones are clouding you? But it slowly occurred to me that this was me thinking differently, not them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good example.
So much, again, so much to learn here. Folks, you got to get this book, The Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery. Sol Smith is the author. It's out from New World Library. Sol Smith is our life strategist today, right here on Strategies for Living. And he has more to teach us. We have more time. We have more to learn. So come back with us here on Strategies for Living. Don't go away. Hey, let's talk about the Robinson Film Center. You know, I say it a lot. There's no place like the
Absolutely
Robinson.
Absolutely, there is not.
617 Texas Street, downtown Shreveport. You've got so much. You've got the movies. You got Abby Singer's Bistro on the second floor of RFC, open for lunch and dinner Tuesday through Saturday.
Newly remodeled.
Absolutely. Great menu. RobinsonFilmCenter.org is the way you check it all out. You can go to RobinsonFilmCenter.org at any time and find out what movies are showing. Here's the deal. You want to join the crowd, join the fun, become a member. When you become a member, you become a star. Mm-hmm. You get discounts on movies, you get concession upgrades, you get bistro deals. RFC, 617 Texas Street in downtown Shreveport. I'll say it again. There's no place like the Robinson.
There is not, and I'm glad we have one right here.
Absolutely. The Robinson Film Center.org.
Reading begins not in the classroom, but in your child's brain. I'm Donisa Walker with LearningRx Shreveport. If your child struggles to read, maybe he or she has trouble focusing or comprehending, LearningRx Shreveport offers a science solution to reading problems, working one-on-one with your child, targeting his or her reading skills. Today, call LearningRx Shreveport. Make an appointment to have your child assessed. I know you want to help your child. So does LearningRx Shreveport.
We all have problems every day. We all need help along the way. We need strategies, strategies, strategies for living. Baby Radio.
And welcome back in. Welcome back in to Strategies for Living Radio. Lauren Leon McMillan, David McMillon with Sol Smith today. The Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery. That is Sol Smith's new book out from New World Library. And, of course, you can find him online and just go to Professor Sol. .com. Remember, Sol is S-O-L. ProfessorSol.com.
Sol, the name of your book is The Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery. So many people, whether they're autistic or not, struggle with understanding who they are. How do autistic traits shape that inner journey in a different way?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, autistics, especially those who come about this later in life, are masking a lot. And what that means is that we are modifying our behaviors to meet the expectations and culture of those around us. So we're watching what's going on and trying to sort of fit in. Mm-hmm. And we just sort of operate by this latent assumption that that's what everybody's doing. But it turns out that other people have a much more hardwired sense of things earlier in life than we do. And so with all this masking behavior, there usually comes some sort of a point in life, which can be something like a, you know, what we would think of as a midlife crisis, where things may be falling apart or you may be experiencing a big change. And something that you'll hear a lot of autistics say is like, I don't even know who I am anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's because, you know, especially if you lose someone close to you, or you experience a, you know, separation or something like that, that you realize that what you thought of yourself was really in context of somebody else.
Right.
And that it's a sort of codependence of having other people to adapt yourself to. So lots of times you can ask them, like, what do you want in life? And they can name you a million things they want for their spouse, their kid, their friends, but they don't really know very much about what they want. Mm-hmm. And this just amounts to the fact that they ultimately, you know, did not really finish developing a solid personality when they were in that stage when they were younger. So I always tell people that it's, you know, unmasking isn't just stopping all these modified behaviors to be more, you know, socially acceptable, but also it's digging into yourself and trying to figure out what is it that you want, who is it that you are. Mm-hmm. And this might take some experimentation. It might take some trying things out and which can be really scary.
Yeah.
You know, but essentially there's an aspect of self-invention here that could be really liberating under the right circumstances, but usually is much more intimidating than liberating.
So for someone listening who might be in that process right now,
mm-hmm.
how can someone mm-hmm. with neurodivergence or not, how can they maintain their authenticity and try to embark on this journey of self-discovery without the masking or the people-pleasing?
Yeah, it is really tricky, and it's nice, of course, if you have a good support system. And as with anything, access really matters. Mm-hmm. And this makes everything a bigger challenge, especially as you get different, you know, marginalized identities in here. So women or minorities who are autistic are going to have even more trouble than somebody like me
right.
is going to have with this, because there are higher expectations and higher forms of adaptation that are just sort of latently being expected. So It is a question of what you are able to do when, but ultimately, masking is something that is cognitively draining.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing two things when you're masking. One is you're restraining yourself a lot, and restraining things like fidgeting, like rocking, like talking about certain things. And then you're also observing and acting a lot, which is something that other people aren't doing to that extent. So by the end of the day, you're usually really exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said before, as you get older, your working memory declines, and suddenly you can't even do all of these things as well as you used to. And it starts to impede on your work life, your home life, and all sorts of things. You feel like you're going a little crazy.
Yeah.
So it becomes really necessary to find ways that you can stop some of this restraint and be a little bit more yourself, but also noticing that if you have some sensory sensitivities, that those take a lot out of your cognitive energy as well. Trying to block out, you know, certain types of light or sounds especially can make it really overwhelming and make your sort of emotions more fragile just from that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like an accommodation that people who I've recommended this to just absolutely love, and you know, maybe everybody can learn from this, is a really good pair of noise canceling headphones.
Yes.
If you're able to wear those for long periods of time, it's almost restorative, because you get to really take a break from all of the sounds. You know, depending on your work environment, depending on your duties, you may not be able to. And you know, sometimes people in the home can be a little offended that you need to block out all the sound, but hopefully you can get some understanding there. So there's different ways that we can try to decrease the expectations, decrease the load, and then you know, also decrease the amount of that we feel pressured to match the vibe of everybody else, feel a little bit more acceptance. And this is hard for people. This is hard for everybody.
Well, that brings up a term that you talk about in the book, and that's neuroaffirming. So what is that, and how do I do it?
Neuroaffirming means, you know, that for example, is to fight the stigmas of autism, ADHD, or any other sort of neurological condition, but instead to see these differences as, you know, who they are. You know, you might look for advantage in these differences, and that's great, but you don't even have to go that far. So much as accepting that there are neurological differences that are going to make things different for this person. So being neuroaffirming might be, you know, recognizing somebody's need for accommodation, recognizing that an open office may not work for some employees, recognizing that fluorescent lights would be much better if they're LED lights for some people. I keep picking on fluorescent lights, but I'm telling you, they're awful.
Yes, I agree.
And you know, like certain stores are getting better about having sensory friendly hours where the music is off. And I can't tell you how much better that is for me going to a store and having the music off.
Yeah.
So being neuroaffirming is understanding that not everybody is having the same, you know, nervous system experience, and that you want to make people feel comfortable being who they are and, you know, existing in this space.
When you coach someone, what's some of the first things that, and we only have a minute here, so I gotta get you to answer quick. What's some of the first things that you want to communicate to somebody who calls you for coaching?
I mean, you know, quite honestly, is I want to communicate to them that they're not broken, that there are other people out here. We don't see our experience reflected on TV, reflected in the movies. Autistic characters that we do see, or autistic coded characters that we do see, you know, House or Sherlock Holmes or something, they do not really reflect our experience. And instead, we're seeing the stories of people who are much more typically adjusted. And I think it's important for them to know that I talk to hundreds, if not thousands, of people around the world who are having experiences very much like theirs, that they're not broken, that they're just existing in a little different way.
The Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery. It's a great book. It's out from New World Library. Sol Smith is the author. It's Flourishing as a Neurodivergent Adult. Got to find Sol Smith. You can connect with him at Professor Sol. .com. Remember, Sol is S-O-L. We'll be back in just a moment here on Strategies for Living.
From the bayou to your table, we're keeping it alive with flavors from the family passed down to survive. The Godfather's here. With a twist in the tail, alligator Italian sausage, and it sure won't fail. It's the boss of the bayou, a taste you can't refuse. Italian tradition, Cajun infused. Godfather sausage, bold and true. The Padres bringing the bayou to you.
Get the Godfather Alligator Italian Sausage only at Fertitta's Delicatessen, 1124 Fairfield Avenue in Shreveport. Pick up a Muffy while you're there. The Godfather Alligator Italian Sausage. It's a taste you can't refuse. Sold only at Fertitta's, 1124 Fairfield Avenue in Shreveport.
Dealing with stress? Pain? Feel like you're running out of options? When your life is balanced, wellness is a given. True wellness is holistic. It's about the mind, the body, and the spirit, all in balance. Now, there's a place right here in Shreveport that's all about helping us achieve peak mental, emotional, and physical health. The Balanced Life, 117 Kings Highway, right next door to Strawn's. Come see and feel the difference getting your life in balance can be. Many of your friends and neighbors have already learned the difference less stress and pain mean in their lives. You can book a discovery session right now online, thebalancedlife.us. All you've got to lose is stress, pain, or maybe both. Come see and feel for yourself the real difference balanced wellness makes. The Balanced Life Wellness Center, 117 Kings Highway in Shreveport, next door to Strawn's, thebalancedlife.us.
Mm-hmm.
And welcome back. Welcome back into Strategies for Living. Lauren Leon McMillan, David McMillan, with Sol Smith as our life strategist today. He's got a great new book out from New World Library, The Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery, Flourishing as a Neurodivergent Adult, out from New World Library, and you can connect with him at ProfessorSol.com. So, I wish we had a whole lot more time.
Yeah.
What do you want people to take away? What's the biggest single thing you want people to take away from our conversation here today?
I want people to be curious, about their own lives and their own experiences, to question it and dig into it. And I think that that's a very exciting way to live. And I do want to stress that we don't know what we don't know about autism, but what we do know is also very interesting, that we do know it's genetic. We do know that it's not caused by, you know, the environment. And we do know that it's not, you know, dangerous.
Right.
So that we should try and have a little bit more acceptance than we've been seeing lately on a sort of like, you know, mass political scale.
Right. Well, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. I hope that we will get a chance to connect again and continue the conversation. You've been a great...
I hope so, too. Thank you so much.
You've been a great life strategist. Folks, you can continue the conversation with Sol by going to ProfessorSol.com and by getting the book, The Autistic's Guide to Self-Discovery, out from New World Library. Thank you for being here with us today on Strategies for Living, and we appreciate our sponsors making it possible, the Robinson Film Center and Azalea Cleaners and Pintail Roofing and Learning RX and the Balanced Life Wellness Center, Fertitta's Delicatessen, home of the Godfather, Alligator Italian Sausage, and some pretty good Muffies, too. If today were the last day of your life, you only had one more phone call that you could make, who would you call? And what would you say? And why? Why are you waiting? Make the call. For Lauren Leon McMillan and for Sol Smith, I'm David McMillan. See you next time right here on Strategies for Living.